Welcome back to another episode of the Chats with Clark podcast. I'm your host, Joe Clark, but here at Chats with Clark, we don't do poppy intros. We get straight to the points. And the point today is the great Dave Martin. Dave, how are you? Thanks for joining.
I'm doing well, Joe. Thank you for having me, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you. Dave had reached out and was looking to get on a podcast, which is always a great way to start. So if you or anyone that you know would be a good fit to hop on the Chats with Clark podcast, shoot me an email, shoot me a text, give me a call, whatever suits you. You can find me on Instagram or anywhere under the tag Clark12Joe or Chats with Clark. Dave, so tell us a little bit about yourself. What are you up to? What's going on?
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Obviously, as you guys know, I'm David Martin. I'm a sophomore at Tri-C right now, second year, going into the field of psychology. I really find that it's an important field right now with mental health, especially with the pandemic when it started and as it's still going on. So we're really looking to be a part of something that can expand in that nature. Other than that, though, still live at home, Northeast Ohio. Being that I'm at a community college right now, I'm looking to transfer to a four-year institute next year. I've sent out options to Boston College, Colby College out in Maine, Princeton, Brown, Cleveland State, Case Western, OSU. So really, really trying to get out there, try and find myself where I'm at.
Yeah, that's a lot of great options right there too. And you just said a lot. There's so much there to unpack too. So you had mentioned psychology, which is great. So you're what, 2 years in, 3 years in? How many years in are you now? Two, right. Yeah, perfect. Usually that's how it goes, I feel like, with community college, like two and then shift, but
right.
Here nor there. So with the psychology, what was it that sparked your interest? So you mentioned the pandemic. What was it? And what was kind of your thought process that had you thinking, man, like I should really go into this and that I could be effective and make a positive difference?
You know, I think it really started with my older brother, Nick. He's done something similar where he started out with counseling and then has gone into the mental health realm. And him and I have had really good conversations about how important, you know, just psychology and mental health is. And I think that, you know, ending my time at St. Ignatius, I graduated right when the pandemic had started. And from there on, I think I noticed, even just through like social media articles, whatever it may be, that mental health was like, I mean, people were in their homes, couldn't go anywhere. And we realized what we took for granted. And so like people's mental health started to deteriorate, obviously, because like we're not built like that. You know, like we're built for like the interaction. We didn't have that. So, and you know, going into college, psychology classes, I didn't have any in high school. Now I was able to expand my mind on that. And so then I started out with some like just general courses, and I really have found a loving for it and an understanding for it. And so as mental health grows and the study of it grows, I really want to be a part of that. And it's interesting too, because the history of it, you know, is like really relatively new. I mean, it's like, you know, the whole mental health aspect has been maybe, if you want to say discovered from like the 20th century, early 20th century. And so it's something that's still new and something that that has a lot of opportunity for growth.
Yeah. Right. Like I remember like reading different articles at kind of on the history of it a little bit. And I felt like everyone like with schizophrenia and stuff like you talk about, like that's obviously one that's kind of misunderstood, I would say largely, but also that like it started off and that was just like the lump sum. It was like, if you had mental health issues, schizophrenic, like it was like a bang bang. As like, if you look at the history, it was everything was schizophrenia. And right. Of course we know now that that's not the case. So it's amazing how even within that recent history, things have progressed so much from everything is schizophrenia or not knowing anything at all to all of the whole vast knowledge really that we have now.
Yeah, definitely. There was definitely, like you said, like, oh, you just have schizophrenia, proving that it was just like a very closed-minded view towards like maybe what people were going through. And, you know, like maybe like to no fault of their own. Like now we just have like, there's so much in terms of technology and how we can figure out things that it really is like our privilege now as human beings to really figure out kind of what mental health is, what are the stigmatizes like around it too. You know, how can we get rid of the stigmatizing around mental health as well?
So have most of the classes kind of been introductory, or have you started to dive into different topics yet and kind of specialize your focus a little bit?
Yeah, so beginning the classes were introductory, but recently we've started to dive into psychology classes that have focused more on specific topics. So for example, this past summer, I took a class on like abnormal psychology, dealing with like schizophrenia, different sleeping and eating disorders, which was super interesting. Also have covered things like social psychology in terms of how we communicate, human-to-human interaction. And the one I'm taking right now is child development and adolescence, which is really interesting to just learn about like early stages, being part of like early life for babies, toddlers, and as they grow up, just like all the things that we don't remember, but there's so much that goes into just being a child and going through childhood and what your environment is and everything else like that.
Yeah, that's amazing. Have you found that any of these kind of stand out to you more than others? Like kind of like to compare it to nursing or whatever, right? Like I feel like a lot of doctoral, which is essentially what we're doing with the brain, is like you eventually you specialize, like you learn a lot and then you kind of like, oh, I like this, and you go that way. Has any of that started to happen for you yet? Or I'm sure there's still a lot more to be exposed to too, but
yeah, right. I would say still definitely more to be exposed to. I would say that through almost through 2 years, the child development one has really caught my attention.
Yeah.
Just like relating to little kids. And maybe too, it's like just even like a little backstory. Just like I have a nephew and a niece, the godfather then to my niece. So I am taking this class right now. I'm kind of able to relate what I learn in that class, related to them, like when we get together with family gatherings, yeah, et cetera. So that has really been super interesting, been able to make some connections with how they react and how they act and stuff like that. So I would say the child development one and adolescence has really caught my attention. I'd even say the abnormal psychology one this past summer did, in terms of the disorders that were taught. Also too, is the only like summer class that I took this past year. So. Oh, nice. You know, I only focused in terms of school, I only focused on that. So those two have really caught my attention. But yeah. I also recognize that like I have like three psychology classes I'm taking next semester. So I know that there's still a long way for me to go in terms of like what I can build my structure on.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And what are those three next semester? Where do you go from here? How does it keep building?
One of them is a quantitative one. So it's going to focus on like the statistics of psychology. So there's going to be a lot of like case studies that are involved with it. Another one concerns like death and dying, and like just like the mind process through like events like that. And I can't remember the third one exactly. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be great though. To register for them, so it's not like completely fresh in my brain, but I'm looking forward though to it, and I know which ones I have to do, and so I'm ready to take on the last semester there.
Yeah, totally. Dave, in your mind, as you go through this in your second year studying this, what factors do you think affect our mental health the most? Like if you had to pinpoint like boom, 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 or however many booms you need, however many points you need, but what are the main factors that you think affect our mental health?
That's a great question, Joe. I would say the experiences that we have.
Okay.
So for example, in terms of like, it could relate to what we actually see. Maybe like we see a traumatic event and that affects our mental health. And we just can't go through seeing something like that again. And then that can deteriorate and lead to other things. I'd also say too, in terms of experiences, like what happens to us personally, whether it's like a car accident, for example, that could really be affecting. So I think experiences are really something that occur that can impact our mental health, whether it relates to us directly or it relates to something that we've seen. Mm-hmm. I think there's some influence too with genetics. That's obviously on the biological realm in relation to psychology can be like a little bit more challenging to like try and connect. But in terms of though, like observational learning, that has really played a huge impact, and just how like we view behaviorism, in terms of then like how we react to things in life, which can then affect our mental health.
Yeah, awesome. It's really fascinating to me too, because experiences are all that we really have, right? Like, so you say like the experiences that we firsthand take on or ones that we witness, and like, that's, I feel like that is life, you know. So often many people are of the opinion that it's what we do that we actually can learn from, you know, like get your hands dirty and get your hands on whatever you're trying to learn. And that, I mean, that speaks, like, that's exactly what you're saying right now, because that's going to affect how you think about it. It's going to affect your disposition towards it. And it's going to affect how you handle it going forward too, when it happens again, if it does.
Right. Yeah. And it can affect too, just like how we look then at like other circumstances that like may relate to it. So like, let's say like something happens to you personally where like something shatters on you and you have to like go to the hospital or whatever, just because you have like gashes and wounds. Right. So then when you get out of it, if you even hear like something that like startles you, it doesn't even have to be on glass. It can be like anything else. Like your mind instantly triggers that reaction from the time when something happened to you. And it can just like, and it brings back like a little bit of that PTSD for a quick second. So, you know, like this is a great talking point too. It's interesting how we can look at something like that and say, okay, this has been overlooked for so many years. Now we can pinpoint a specific example like that and say, or ask the question, how do we approach a situation like this? And how can we solve something so small like this with different therapies, different techniques, that can help the person get over, that can get over like the situation or even just like a simple startle. You know, they can get over that.
David, how do you even like try that out? Like, cause like the different therapies and stuff, what I'm trying to get at is how do you try out different therapy ideas, when working on humans? Cause you don't want to have like a human guinea pig, right? Like it's not, so how does that even work? How does the trial and error process work for different therapies or different healing mechanisms that are being toyed around with to see if they're effective?
Yeah, that's a great question, Joe. I think that the best thing for someone to do, again, in like my early parts, just from what I understand, is it is almost like you don't want to be a human guinea pig, but I feel like there's an importance though in like trial and error and what you can do for certain types of therapies. So for example, one of the therapies that you can get over with PTSD is something called prolonged exposure therapy, where like you constantly tell the story of like what happened over and over again to your therapist. And then you have like out of therapy sessions, like at home, where you listen to your recording constantly of what happened. And then in that way, you kind of just like grow accustomed to your story, which can then help you grow accustomed to, just like, again, like the startling impact for, like, if we go back to like that glass example where it was like the shattering and the noise is like really what got to you. But you are right though. Obviously talk therapy can help, in terms of just like, hey, something as simple as just like explaining the situation, learning different like breathing techniques, different muscle relaxation, self-dialogue. That type of process is called stress inoculation training. So those are two really good examples from the top of my head that have been like clinically shown to work with very, very good high results, great percentage of like people coming out of it being like, oh yeah, like this actually worked for me.
Yeah. Nice. That's good. It's amazing how much it's growing. It really is. And I have two thoughts that I want to throw at you two, or two questions really. So I feel like in conjunction with, well, they go together. So with social media, I feel like it's a big, people use it often as both a good and a bad thing naturally. So I feel like when people talk about mental health, sometimes they slam social media as one of the things that really brings down their mental health, right? Brings down their wellness of their mental state. What do you see that, first of all? And have you guys talked about that? And then also what are some of your recommendations in regards to social media specifically? That's one aspect. And then I want to tie it to this too. Another thing I think that social media does is raises awareness about a lot of things, right? Like, cause everyone can post pretty much whatever they want at any given moment. And it gets out to the whole internet, a slew of people in an instant, which is crazy. But with that, I think something that's common that we see now is like, hey, like here are tips for anything. And with that can be mental health. So here are tips for people who are going through it. Here are tips to make sure that you don't go through it. So my second question to you is, what are some of the tips that you would recommend or practices to put into place for people who maybe aren't going through anything, but also don't want to in down the road? Like what are different tips that you could give to someone who wants to maintain a healthy and vibrant mental state?
Yeah. So to cover your first point with social media, I definitely believe, I don't want to look at it so like black and white where either it is or it isn't. So I think that finding a healthy middle ground and saying that there definitely are certain aspects to social media that rightly do get slammed for affecting people's mental health. One of the big things is that I think we try to live up to other people's standards. And when we do that, then we kind of create a facade that really covers up who we truly are. So we try to live out this like imperfect reality from social media. And that can really be detrimental, because then like people then try and struggle so hard to become like that, right? It becomes like this comparison game, which isn't healthy. Because then at that point you're beating up on yourself, and then you're also trying to beat up on other people. Which can be broad, and but like I really think that if we look at social media in terms of like, you know, like Instagram, for example, like when it's just like picture after picture, right? And so when we look at this, I think that we can constantly fill our minds with like comparing ourselves to that, as opposed to really looking at what it's worth is looking at people's lives that you follow and recognizing like just like how happy they are. That is like meant to make you happy, right? So if that's the original intention, then what we have to do then is put more emphasis on that. And it's the same thing with Twitter. Twitter as opposed to Instagram can be more about writing and sharing like personal opinions. Mm-hmm. That can, you know, Facebook, that can be a similar way in which like what we read, what we see can really have an effect on then like how we think. And sometimes it can be for the negative, which almost makes sense. We as humans, it's easier to think about the negative circumstances than it is like being positive or being optimistic. So I do think that there is some just slam that gets on social media. Sure. In terms of affecting people's mental health. But I do think though that there is a way to combat that. And one of the main ways really is to just like control like what you follow, which can obviously be easier said than done. Or just admit that like, hey, I need to like take a break from like being on my phone, from being on social media. Mm-hmm. And we kind of hear maybe like in other podcasts or something where it's just like, oh, like you don't have a Twitter and Instagram. And it's like, yeah, it's like, well, your mental health must be much better. And that's kind of like a little bit of like a butt of a joke, but there is though some truth to that.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, something to just like think about in terms of relating mental health and social media is like really trying like filter through who do you follow and really watch like how much time you spend on it too, right?
Yeah.
We become so enamored with just looking at our phones or our computer and like shoving our faces in our screens. And I think that something else though that we can do is just like find a hobby that you like, right? Like get out, like get away from it, focus maybe on more like schoolwork or work, something else to just like get your mind away from that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like, there's this guy by the name of Jay Shetty who I like a lot of the content that he puts out. It's all about well-being. And one of the things is he talks about is this persona that our diet is more than what we eat, right? Which we've all heard a plethora of times at this point, but he really has been on that wave for a little bit and is always saying like, you know, I mean, the stuff that you're putting in, like that comes to the content that you're reading. And it's just like the books that you were to read or whatever you're watching and all of that sort of thing. So it's really important to filter through and make those conscious decisions. And, you know, I personally always think about this interestingly, like there's content that you just don't want to see. And if I know someone who's putting out content that I don't want to see, like, look, it's a business transaction. Okay. It doesn't mean I don't like you as a person, whatever. Like I don't want to see your content. So you're getting the mute, you're getting the unfollow, like whatever it is, like stop posting that stuff. You know what I mean? Like if it's totally crazy or if it's better for me, like you got to do that. And I think that's like a tough dichotomy that I really think is prevalent, is that like this unfollow follow game that happens. And everyone, you know, I'm sure, you know, in our age, realm, right, is like, well, oh, that person unfollowed me or this person unfollowed me. And it's like, well, yeah, like sometimes that's what happens. I don't think it's really a personal onslaught like it's hyped up to be, but
right. Yeah, it's almost like, and it's tough to just like say like who cares, but like, you know, like you can really just like work on really like not caring about that, like, and again, like we just try to like build up this facade sometimes on social media, and it's just like trying to like draw away from that. And I think too, as we relate it to mental health, we can also then relate it to like our actions. Like if we get a bad mental health and some of the aspects from that are from social media, then like it becomes really unhealthy when we take it out on other people. and we can like diminish or destroy relationships with like a significant other, family members, friends, whoever it may be, that's when it really becomes unhealthy. And that's when it's like, okay, if you are in that spot, you have to like kind of take a step back, see what you can even just like delete or control in your life. Look at maybe there are other factors and really like make a list and pinpoint certain aspects of social media that you don't like or that you might find to be like troubling.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, anytime you can write stuff down and like work yourself towards it, you know what I mean? Like, so you're saying like make it almost like a pros and cons list. I mean, that's going to hold you to like, oh no, I got to stay away from these cons. I got to really work towards these pros. I mean, that's powerful. It's a great point, Dave.
Yeah. And then you had a second question, Joe.
I did. Yeah. I'm curious for, while there are many people that fall under the category of going through a mental struggle, there are also, I think it's worthwhile to note that there's also people who maybe are, you know, they're okay. Like they're doing well. And they're, I would say maybe at an equilibrium state. So for people who want to maintain a healthy, for all people, but for people who want to maintain a healthy, just kind of, the word I use is vibrant mental state, what are some of the tips or tricks that you would tell them to do in their life? Maintain that.
No, that's great. To start off right off the bat, on the surface, just find things that you like to do. Working out and exercising is a great thing to relieve your mind, mental health, listen to some music, whatever it may be. And you do something healthy, not only mentally, but also just physically for your body too, which can then obviously have like impacts long ways. Something else too, you know, if you're like a musical person, like play an instrument, like really like to really get your mind off of it, like go do something like that. Play drums, play guitar. That's obviously a very popular one. It's something that I find myself doing, something that I really like doing. Like when I don't have, like if I'm in a, like a good state, have nothing else going on, plop on the bed, play a little guitar and it's great. Reading is another phenomenal thing. Really can like just like strengthen your mental health in terms of like what you read, and can just like help like your grammar and everything else like that. Really be helpful, and it's super relaxed and super peaceful, you know, get like a cup of coffee or get like something like tea or something, and that can really be helpful too. So those are like surface level things that I would include there for people to do. Another thing too, honestly, is to just like have a talk therapist, like meet once a month. That's also something really easy, just to like have someone there to like check up on you who specializes in this realm. You know, like you're healthy, you're going through a great state of mind, really nothing's impacting you. It can still be, you know, keep that up by having someone to talk to. And that can really be helpful just in case something does come up, right? Because I like to use the analogy of when we are in like a good mental state, we like to ride this wave. That's like the analogy. So like we're riding this wave. Sometimes though that wave crashes, right? We can't always get like the perfect wave. So what you have to do then sometimes is to look at the situation, recognize what problems have risen from it, and see who you can go talk to. And obviously one of the best people that you can go talk to is like a psychiatrist or a psychologist. So again, that's something then a little bit deeper, like, oh, hey, I can still go talk to someone who specializes in this field, even if I'm not going through something so traumatic or so specific or have some type of disorder. It's good to just have someone there to talk to. Those are like the two big main categories that I would fall upon.
Yeah, that's good. It makes total sense to me that you would want to have the release valve to bring you happiness, but also as something to fall back on, like as something that you know will again bring you happiness as a release valve. Excuse me. So that would be all the things that you're doing that you like to do. And then also on the contrary, or in conjunction with it, really is have someone that you can talk to when it's great, when it's bad. And then you have that release valve too, because it's like you're pouring your inner self into that for the better state of your health. And then also the same for what you're actually doing. And so I gotta pick your brain on this a little bit too. So something I was having a conversation with someone extremely recently, and we were talking about exactly this, about therapy and that sort of thing. And one of the things that I try and do as a person is be someone that others can come to, right? That they know that their words stay with me, and that it's, you know, it's going to the grave with me, kind of thing. Like, I'm not one that's going to be out here barking around other people's business. It's just not who I am. But on top of that, with that is being trustworthy to have conversations with that are deepened, even if it's troubled. You know, I'm always like I promise, like you're not, it's not going anywhere. You're not going to rattle me. Like I'm not going to be able to break down. I'm not going to break down with you. Like, I want to be a confidant for people. So with that, how do you find people in your life that, and this, I am not discrediting therapy. I want to put that very clearly, establish that, because therapy has its place too. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is, like, sometimes you want to go to someone that you know isn't getting paid for it. just being real, right? Like, how do you in your life dictate who those people are? How do you find who those people are in your life? And how would you recommend that others find those people too?
Yeah, very important to find those type of people. One thing to consider is just like their trustworthiness towards you and what they mean to you in terms of their relationship to you. So, you know, like you can go to like, obviously like your parents, like if they're very open and understanding, are great people. I know personally for me, I've gone to them. I've gone to my two older brothers as well. You know, PJ, Nick has really been helpful. And again, like, what do these people incorporate? Well, yes, their family. That's obviously a huge relation. But another thing, though, is that like I can trust them with this information. We've built up something so strong in our lifetime that I've been able to trust them, and that like we can just talk to each other so easily. Another person too, who I would talk to, if you find yourself in this spot, is like a significant other, right? Like your partner, someone who you are in love with. And you know, this kind of reminds me of the time in the office when Jim and Pam are having the conversation about like, I can't remember if it was like about their wedding or something, but Pam mentions like her thoughts and feelings, right? And she goes to Jim about this, and Jim goes, well, do you ever talk to Roy about it? And Pam goes, no, I try not to bother him with stuff like that. And Jim goes, oh, you mean like your thoughts and feelings? And Pam goes, yeah. That's like a really good, that's like a good, funny example, but it's very, very relatable, right? So beyond the family realm, you can also, or not all, not can, you should go to someone who is very important like that in your life too. Find that type of person again that like you can just like trust and you can be open to, and know too that they have a flexible mind, right? That they can, yeah, that they can withstand something that you're telling them, and that they can then in turn be there for you in the long run, make sure that you're doing well, etc. It's funny though, you mentioned like, hey, not to discredit therapy, which is very, very good point, right? Because that's not always going to be available, especially if you meet on like a weekly or monthly structure, that's not always there for you because they still have other people to attend to. But people who in your life who can be free, it's very important to go to them as well.
Yeah. And that's like, I want to make that very clear. Like, I just, I'm not discrediting it, but I do have the question of like, do you, and I also believe like there's value in not putting everything in all your eggs in one basket, right? Like the more people you talk to, the more perspectives you're going to gain. And every person has a different personality, which means that they have strengths and things that maybe aren't also their strengths. And that goes for therapists, that goes for non-therapists, that goes for doctors, non-doctors, you know, physicians, everything, like whatever. So that would be the perfect creation to me. It's like you have a therapist who you've got a good rapport with that obviously takes time that you develop, and then other people who you have a good rapport with that takes time, like you mentioned with your brothers, who are awesome people. And that is the perfect idea, is then you have a bunch of people that you can go to me. And like one of them, you're like, boom, I know, like I need professional advice. Like this person's been through the ringer. They've seen everything. Like my therapist has got my back. But then also you're like, you know what? Like maybe I don't need the professional advice on this one, or don't want the professional advice, I should say. And then it's like, you got that option too. You know, it's just, there's a lot of different fields that can be created with that.
And Joe, something you just said too brings up a really good point of if you're going through something specific, right, and you don't have that option for talk therapy at the moment, you're going through something very specific, try and find someone in your life who's also maybe gone through a similar situation, right? Because then what they can offer is maybe like more sound advice on how they handled it. They can give examples, et cetera. And I think that's where like having like a wide friend group or like a diverse friend group can really help, because they can go through, or they've gone through maybe certain situations that you don't know yet, but if it does come up, you can talk to this person about it.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Dave. I love it. It's a really important field. And like you mentioned, it really is growing a lot. I'm excited because you're clearly very passionate about it. And I get excited when people are passionate about whatever they're going into, because they have the best likelihood at being really good at whatever that is. So for you, whatever part of psychology you end up going into, whether it's working with the kiddos or not, you're going to be great at it, Dave. So I'm excited to follow that journey and to hear more about it.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that.
No, yeah, absolutely. So whenever you come on for the second one, we'll make sure we talk more about it. But another thing that I know you mentioned right when we were starting off is that you are thinking about transferring schools. So that's a big change, right? There's a big life switch there, and you are uprooting yourself from the Northeast Ohio area and potentially going to Boston, to Maine, to all these different schools that you had mentioned. And there were some that are still in Ohio too, but Boston was one that stood out. And I know you are a person that likes to travel a little bit and that you've been to Boston. What is it about transferring schools is kind of tickles your fancy a little bit? What makes it thought worthy?
Yeah. So specifically the school in Boston I'm looking at is Boston College. My older brother Nick went there. So even just as a younger kid in grade school, you know, me and my parents, we would go out there to help him move in, help him move around. And so I got accustomed to this city at like a somewhat young age, relatively speaking. And ever since then, when I just gained more freedom to do more in life, like from the start of college until now, like I've flown out to Boston to see Nick three separate occasions. And during those trips and previous trips, I've gotten accustomed to the city with its history, how to go around it. There's a lot of like open-mindedness there. One of the big things too is that in terms of its placement, it's really in a nice spot compared to like New York, Philly, DC even. So there's a lot of opportunity in the New England area and on the East Coast that it has to offer, and Boston's a great city for it. And one of the things too, Boston College is a Jesuit college. I went to St. Ignatius, so I really like to continue that like Jesuit formation through the schools. I think that they have a solid foundation, especially with like service and social justice. And so I think that continuing that is really, really important. And another thing too, like being in that New England area, there's a lot of like job opportunity, good nightlife, stuff like that. But there's also stuff to do like outside too, like skiing, like all in New York, all up there in the Appalachian. And that also leads to like really great hiking places as well, in like New Hampshire and Vermont. So going out to Boston would be awesome. Obviously, again, BC is one of the schools I'm considering, and really looking forward, looking forward to what the future holds for me in that aspect.
Absolutely. Yeah. The future's bright. The future's bright, bro. So when going to Boston, are there nerves that come about with it, or do you feel totally comfortable because of the exposure that you have had? You know,
that's really good. You know, there are still some nerves.
Yeah.
Being truthfully honest on this podcast, there are still some nerves when I go out there, just even that like drive to Cleveland Hopkins, just like, all right, I have to remember like the process of getting out of Logan International Airport, that's the airport in Boston, getting out of there, going to like the spot for the Uber, stuff like that, going to the bus, to get on the train, it's, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, that's easy. Like we could drive around Cleveland, like it's nothing, right? Like we've been used to that, gone that, it's whatever. Going around Boston is completely different. So I still do get the nerves. I get a little comfortable each time though, a little bit more comfortable each time. But there are still those nerves of like, okay, I'm being placed in a city that I haven't been to in say 6 months or even a year. So I kind of need to readjust my thinking because my surroundings have been readjusted. So it's just like general human nature to just like still have those nerves, but little by little, I can promise you that they improve from my own experience. They do improve.
Good. Yeah. And it's a worthwhile adjustment too, man. I mean, if we talk about it, like you're for sure going there. So I kind of hope that in some regards you do end up there. I know it really brings you some joy, as we can tell, just talking with you, but, yeah, it's going to be fun. And you mentioned like these hiking things too. I know if anyone were to check out your Instagram, I know you've posted different nature scenes of you and like hiking and that sort of thing. How did you find that you love hiking so much, or skiing or anything outdoors, but Yeah.
So one of the things too, I think it really honestly started when like I really like running. So when I did cross country in grade school or even track, you know, we would go like running through like different areas. Yeah. And it was, and we always got excited to go running through different places. Specifically like with track, we did what were called like road runs occasionally. And we always looked forward to those because we ran through like some of the side streets, main roads, and even like through the woods a little bit. And it was awesome. So really it started from that. And from then on, like just visiting some of the national parks in Northeast Ohio, they have great ones, very simple hiking trails, et cetera, stuff like that. It really then grew from there where, you know, it's like, okay, I've taken on this and I really like the scenery that's here, especially during like the fall when like leaves change, absolutely beautiful. And then it's like, then you want to like take on the challenge of like actually like going out like up a mountain. Like climbing a mountain is sweet. And again, they're tougher in like Ohio. But like you just have like the Appalachian Mountains just east of us. So it's still though somewhat easy to go across a few state lines and just like find some mountains there. It's really incredible. And they're not like the different trails to go up certain mountains are not publicized at all. Right. You have to like really find them on the map, but there are like parking lots for it, directions to it, etc. So again, my liking for it really started because I was like a runner, track, cross country. And then there was one time last year, Nick, my older brother, when I visited him, he goes, "Hey dude, like, you know, are you interested in climbing a mountain?" I said, "Yeah, it's called Mount Major in New Hampshire." And so we climbed that one. And Joe, I cannot tell you like the emotions, the scenery that you get to see on top of this. It's like, oh wow, I'm basically looking at the whole state of New Hampshire right now.
My
like
gosh.
So up there. And you see the different ones. This past trip to Boston, I just came home a week ago. We climbed another mountain in New Hampshire, but this one was it was a 2.5 hour hike up and 2 hours down.
Wow.
It was tough. I mean, a lot of switchbacks. And in the hiking realm, switchbacks are when like you're going one way and then you go through like another way in the foothills. So it's when like you're still like in the trees and like maybe you're climbing up like types of rocks of stairs. This one, you could feel it in your joints going down, painful. Yeah. You were sore the next day.
Oh my gosh.
Sure enough, that was the case. But we were on top of the mountain and we looked west of us and over there was Mount Washington, which just like a little fun fact is like the tallest mountain starting the Appalachian Mountains. Could see snow on it. And it was like 35, 40 miles away, but you could see it so clearly. Like it was
that
just
beautiful.
Right there.
Yeah.
So the scenery, and especially again, doing it in the fall is perfect. It's not too hot and you get awesome scenery with the leaves changing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's been my favorite one so far.
Bro, you got to get, when you're there, Dave, I expect picture updates when you're hiking on the weekend after a week long of classes at BC. Cause that, I mean, this just sounds too good to be true, but on a more serious note, that is a really great way to have like to spend some time, you know what I mean, to really see, like you're saying, see nature and to experience it, because you're like hiking through it and then when you get to the top, it's boom, it's all right there and you see it all. It's kind of like, I mean, that's like a goal, you know what I mean, like that is how goal we orient ourselves. It's like we work and then we want to feel the goal, the greatness of what we just did. And that's kind of what it sounds like, you know what I mean? It's like you're totally absorbed by it.
Yeah. No, that is exactly it. You get up there and you just feel like you're in perfect harmony with everything. And you are just, you're in perfect harmony with yourself too, because you feel so accomplished and you're so relaxed at what you're looking at. And now you're up there. And maybe they're like, the nice thing too, honestly, is when you have other people up there, like complete strangers that you've never met and they're enjoying the same thing. And you can just go and easily like have a conversation with them about what you've seen and now what you're seeing after this hike and how refreshing it feels. So there's definitely too, like, a people aspect to it as well.
Yeah. It's beautiful, bro. It's beautiful. It's very serene. It has a very, appreciative feel to it too. Mm-hmm. And Dave, throughout this podcast episode, you've mentioned, you know, Nick and PJ, your brothers, a lot, and, your family.
tomorrow is Thanksgiving. We're recording this the day before Thanksgiving, and of course following that is Christmas and all of the plethora of holidays that come about through out that time. But what does family mean to you, and in the context of holidays and Thanksgiving, Christmas, whatever, throughout the context of holidays, what role does family play in your life and in the broader scale of holidays and that kind of spirit?
Yeah, family plays a huge role, for sure. Again, being able to see the people that you love, whether close to home or out of state, is really, really important during the context of the holiday season. And like you said too, Thanksgiving tomorrow, we can really focus on the people in our lives, specifically family members that we are grateful for, that we love, and that love us back. So family is huge. And we, you know, the thing about family is that we share our life with them, man. Mm-hmm. Like that, like we share our life with our family members, and yes, with our friends as well. But like when you have someone else who's there who really truly loves you and can be there for you in life, it's really eye-opening to see just like how much they can give back to you. And that especially shows during the holiday season. And when I say like give back, like it's not even just through like the presents and like the commercialism that like Christmas can usually get. Sure. It also comes with the time that we're able to spend with them, giving back our love in ways of like, hey, maybe making like food for them, offering them something, or sitting down and having a conversation with them. We can really take it for granted, I would say, 10 months out of the season, but it's funny though how we transfer, you know, November, December, with between Thanksgiving and Christmas, how we don't take for granted the times that we are with family, because it's such a special moment, a special time. So it's really important to you know, sit with your family members, mm-hmm. Be strong, find those who you love, and really reach out to them too.
Yeah, and reach out. That's a great one. What are you most looking forward to throughout the Thanksgiving Christmas season?
Ooh, good question. Let's see. I know like tomorrow for Thanksgiving, we play football, little turkey bowl, always a great time, get together. Absolutely. With friends. You know, and again, like maybe like some of the parties that happen too, like family mm-hmm. friend parties and everything else like that. Just like the different unique ways of celebrating the holiday season that are so unorthodox compared to how we celebrate other things going on in our lives, not during the holiday season. Sure. So you can get like little family parties. Again, family friend parties are always a great one too. There's something to, I don't know what it is about me. I really like seeing the snow during this holiday season. I think it, you know, like a white Christmas is really something too. I think it can like lift your spirits a little bit too. Yeah. when you see it. There's just something about it, something like spectacle about it. So I would say though, you know, for finding though, like what you really look forward to during the holiday season, I think that there's a variety of things, right? Like it can be going to go ski or like baking something. Baking is always a great one. You know, different stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be awesome though. I hope you enjoy it too. Yeah. You know, my mom's birthday is actually tomorrow too. So it's very fun that, her birthday sometimes of course falls on Thanksgiving, like it does tomorrow. And so I just get excited around, I love Thanksgiving. First of all, I love food. And secondly, I just love getting together with my family. And I know that everyone really prioritizes coming in for it and making sure that everyone's here. Like I have cousins all over and things like that. So it's fun that everyone does do what they can to get in, you know, for Thanksgiving, get in for Christmas and that kind of thing. So I am like so excited for tomorrow just to like crack open a beer and have some food and just chill out and like hang out with everyone and hear what's up with everybody. Cause we get together often, but it's not like there's something different about Thanksgiving because it's so focused, you know, it's so centralized. Like if you get together on a weekend, everyone's got stuff going, you know, like we get together on Sundays. I'm in a basketball league on Sundays. I go to mass on Sunday. It just breaks up the day. I'm so excited to just sit down and that's not a complaint on Sundays, by the way. I'm just saying that it factually breaks up the days. So it's like, I can't dive into a conversation, just let it go, you know? But tomorrow it's like, nah, like get the food on the plate, get the drinks in the hand. And I'm excited to just shoot the breeze with the fam and really just kind of hang out. So
you make a fantastic point. And that's kind of like where I come from too. It's just like, being able to really like prioritize, like, hey, we're setting this thing up so that we as a family, outside family, whoever, can get together. Because you're right, like, I don't know, you're trying to get together on the weekend, like during the summer, and it's just like plans get broken up, or you just like can't because it's just like such like an ordinary time, whatever's going on. But I really feel like the great thing about what people take in during this time is that they do prioritize their loved ones. And, you know, when you can share that conglomerate with each other, it's really something special, something strong that we can build off of as family members.
It is. Yeah. And that's how we grow. And like, these are what develop the relationships that we talked about earlier, that develop that rapport and that ongoing bolstering of each other that turns into these, the people being confidants, being our best friends, being our, you know, close family that people, that everyone wants. Like, ideally people want to be close to their family, right? Like, that's very ideal. So yeah, and prayers for people that are, you know, going through it. I know that you have recently lost a family member, so prayers for you and for anyone who's in similar boats too. You know, that's tough.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like that's something that is prevalent. And of course, because it is such a family-driven time, those thoughts come to mind. So yeah, prayers for those people as well, but it's good. And with Thanksgiving being tomorrow, something that I'm very big on is gratitude, because I think gratitude is something that we all can practice through our actions and through our different mindsets and what we think about and how we think about things. So for me, I contend that people who are more grateful tend to be happier. You know, something I always say is, if you want to be happier, live more gratefully. And it's one of the bolsters, it's one of the foundations for my show. It's one of the foundations for anything that I'm trying to do in the speaking world, and my kind of my infatuation with mindsets and the way people think about different things. Because I think so often we focus on what we actually think as opposed to how we think it or why we think it. And that's where I think the commonalities come about and what we can learn and relate with each other. So all that aside, Dave, I have to ask you, what role does gratitude play in your life? What role does it play now as we're entering this Thanksgiving season? What role does it play in general? How do you practice gratitude? What is gratitude to you, Dave Martin?
Yeah, that's a great question, Joe. Gratitude, I think, can be very broad, very subjective based on the person. Sure. So me, I kind of find gratitude in like the love that we're able to share with other people. And it's very easy to relate that to family members and friends. So if you want to take a deeper dive into it, gratitude in my life can really be expressed by the way that we give back to the community or give back to others. For example, one of the things that I found, at least again, like through Ignatius, shout out my high school, it was great, awesome 4 years there. That was obviously a big part of it. And like the Christmas food drive there is a phenomenal thing. Any example that can come off of that, any type of like food drive in which you're able to give back to those who can be like, who are poor, impoverished, et cetera, just like less fortunate, less privileged. It's really something strong. The gratitude grows from that. And the reason why, at least for what I've found, is that when I'm able to give back to someone, or I'm able to like do an action for someone else, I find my own sense of gratitude and being happy for what I've done in the way that I've helped another person. And really during the holiday season, that is something that is great that has been enforced on society. Like we even hear now about all the times of like different NFL players, you know, like giving back turkeys and like food, like wherever they come from. And that's really strong. And so we can find that sense of gratitude in our own ways as well as it relates to us, even if it is in a smaller setting. I even find it too, might be a weird example, but Christmas shopping, one of my favorite things, but I don't
know. I like it too. It's fun. It's
awesome. It's so sweet. But again, okay, taking a deeper dive into it, you find your sense of gratitude in the love that you are able to share with other people, and really just finding out, like, you know, whether you gift them something that they want or something that you believe will be beneficial to them, right? That's a really open-minded approach to it. That can really be strong.
Yeah, that's awesome, Dave. Yeah, it's like you recognize the humanness in everything, you know, because it all stems from people that are important, whether it's people you don't know that you're serving in the Christmas food drive or on LOB or any of the wonderful opportunities that St. Ignatius offered. Again, shout out our high school. Exceptional in creating an awareness for serving others and just loving people. But aside, your recognition and carrying that through is very prevalent too. So to be able to see that in even Christmas shopping and all of the mentions that you did, is great. So you really have a great head on your shoulders for that. And that is, I think, the root of gratitude is recognizing that people are what we're grateful for, because in some ways it all stems back to that.
Yeah.
And to tie in your hiking too, you know, there's an appreciation for the nature and the earth around us, and just like this serenity that comes about when you hit the top of that mountain, that utter joy, the happiness and just the glory that is that mountain and all of the nature around you. So carry that through with you. Keep that up, Dave. It's really powerful.
And you know, it's something that you and I just like, we don't see it every day. We don't get to see the top of that mountain every day. That can be good. That can be used as a great analogy in life, Joe. I mean, it really can. So when you do find the top of that mountain in any aspect of life, literally, figuratively, it's really important to like take in that moment and relate it back to your roots and just like how else you can incorporate that into other aspects of life.
Amen. Yeah. Amen. We're all hoping to reach the top of that mountain at different times. So it's important, like you said, to take in that moment when we do get there. It is. Yeah. And Dave, hey, so is there anything that you would tell someone? What kind of advice would you give to anyone up and coming, anyone in general, any specific audience you want, but what piece of advice would you give to someone who's listening to this podcast? And you can specialize it or make it as broad as you want.
I'm going to be broad here, but it really means a lot. And that is to just be open-minded, be flexible in life. It's easy from our own experiences to be closed-minded to certain events. And then we tend to relate that to a bunch of other things in our world. But I think that some sound advice would really just to be open-minded, be open to trying new things, you know, like really explore who you are, experience the world, right? Because we can be closed-minded from our past experiences, but knowing that though, we can also then grow in who we are by gaining more experiences. So it's important that when being open-minded, you have a little bit of that strength to like step out of your comfort zone a little bit. And that can be an something you do individually by yourself, or something that you do with other people, like joining like an extracurricular or an organization, or like reaching out to like a friend to like try and see if they want to go do something. And it can even be someone that maybe you haven't spoken to in a really long time. So again, just be open-minded for those up and coming, and take that into many aspects of life, in school, in job, in jobs, and in relationships as well.
Tremendous. Yeah. Be open-minded, gain experiences, do it with people around you, and let yourself grow. That's what you just are radiating right there. That's awesome, Dave. Is there anything else you would want to share before we conclude episode 21, Dave, episode 21 of the Chats with Clark podcast? Is there anything else you want to say, ask, do, get out there? What are you thinking? What's on your mind?
Final remarks, just as we enter into this holiday season, with the previous point of being open-minded, to really reach out to your loved ones, find your loved ones, being that may be, don't take for granted the times that we get to spend with each other. And you know, by doing so, by finding that gratitude during the holiday season, we can maybe even expand that into our life outside of the holiday season, really to not take for granted the time that we get to spend with people that we love, people that we trust, people that we have a great relationship with, even outside the holiday season, just as we move along.
Incredible. There's a very holy man that I know, and he radiates that same energy. He shares when someone asks him how his Christmas was, like, so in a month from now after Christmas, in a month and a couple of days from now after Christmas, and someone asks him, he always, if he's close enough with the person, he'll say, you know, ask me next year, because he wants to carry this Christmas spirit, the joy, the generosity, the gratitude from Thanksgiving, right? All of these positive accolades that we want to embody with us. He wants to carry that through the year, because it's not just like you mentioned, this, like the other 10 months matter. The other 10 months of the year matter.
They do.
So to carry that kind of energy through every day, and to celebrate that Christmas spirit, that Thanksgiving gratitude, with every day, with every single moment, with everyone that we encounter, with all the people that we can. And of course, we're going to fall short a lot of times, but it's like trying to do that is really important. So I think that is a really, sound piece of advice that he offers there. And again, he's a very holy person, I know, for sure. So it's, yeah, it's coming from a very powerful heart.
Yeah, that's great. Again, like you said, we can't be like perfect throughout the entire year and how we make situations last. But there's definitely though an aspect to what we take out of the holiday season, we can take out of it to future get-togethers, parties, etc., that happen in our life that we can find like the same spectacle in as we do in the holiday season.
It's gorgeous. Dave, this has been wonderful, man. I'm really glad that you came on. And I, like I said, I'm thrilled to hear everything you said. And I'm excited to watch you as you go through the rest of your schooling and hopefully hike some more mountains. I'm looking forward to those pictures and to those stories. And Dave, as you go forward, know that we're praying for you. We want you to have the best of luck and to do really well. That comes on behalf of me and anyone who's listening, I'm confident. So this has been episode 21 of Chats with Clark. Of course, as you know, I will be posting all of Dave's info either in the description or in the comments or somewhere there. So if you have any questions or anything that you want to get in touch with Dave about, I'm sure you can shoot him a DM on Instagram or something to that effect and get in touch with him. Dave's a great guy, as you hear. And as you know, it's been fun getting to know his story. And again, this has been episode 21 of Chats with Clark. I am your host, Joe Clark. Hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. And thanks for tuning in.